Hey everyone, this is Stelly FT.
And Heaton Shaw.
And in today's episode of the Startup Chat, we're going to talk about the difference between relationships or co-founder teams that have complementary skills and should be making up great and strong teams.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
We want you to do your best.
And co-founder teams or teams in general that have learned to work well together. The reason why I want to talk about the distinction and explore it with you, Heaton, is that I was talking to a friend of mine. I'm on vacation in Thailand right now. People will hear the birds and the tuk-tuks in the background. I'm on vacation with a bunch of friends. And one of my friends, who is also a startup founder, was telling me that he's considering or that there's some tension and some challenges in the co-founder relationship. And as we were discussing and talking about it, it was apparent that they make up a great team in the sense that their skill sets are very complementary. Their approach, the philosophies, the way they think about things is very different, but in a way, very, I think, in a way that makes them both together better. The problem is not that they're not a great team. The problem is that they've not learned to work well together. So one person, dislikes certain aspects of the other person's personality and strengths and weaknesses and vice versa. I think they haven't learned to accept each other's strengths and weaknesses and appreciate them. And that creates all this tension and friction. It brought up to me for the first time thinking about the difference between people that are a good team versus people that have learned to work well together, that those two things are different. So I wanted to take you to pick your brain on this pick it apart and see if there's something valuable that we can share with the audience on this.
Yeah, I still would love to know the difference in your mind between the two.
Okay, so I'll give you a great example. I'll take one personal example because myself and my two co-founders, Anthony and Thomas, the three of us are very, very different personality-wise. We're very different in our upbringing. We're very different the way we dress. And we're very different people. And when we started working together, you know, there were a lot of things that made them different from me that I resented or that I disliked and that I secretly wanted to change, right? So I love that they were different from me, but I also didn't like it whenever it was inconvenient for myself. So a simple, small example is that, you know, Anthony, one of my co-founders, is a super quiet type of a person, and he will literally just walk up out of a room and leave without saying goodbye. Or he will enter the office without saying hello. Or if I wrote him an email about something that he wasn't sure how to answer or that was maybe, you know, a conflicting point between the two of us, he would just ignore it, right? This type of thing would drive me insane in the early days. And it would be the type of thing that would create real potential for conflict. I would argue. I would want him to change and I would get really angry and pissed at him. And this is just one example. And eventually, I realized that I, too, have things that probably drive him crazy, but he doesn't seem to have the need to change me. So I would have to make up my mind, you know, am I cool with this person the way they are, or am I only cool with this person if they change in all the ways that I want them to change, becoming more like me? And I just learned in a weird way to accept my co-founders, appreciate their strengths, but also accept their weaknesses or accept the way they are different from me. And today, when he walks into a room or walks off a room or when I write to him something, it doesn't respond. My interpretation is not, this is such an asshole way of dealing with people. This is outrageous. I hate this. Now I'm sitting here waiting for the answer. It's never coming. I don't have that inner dialogue. I'm just thinking, this is the way Anthony operates. This probably means that he doesn't know how to answer. So let me wait and see if I still feel like this is an important thing to discuss tomorrow. And if it still is, let me talk to him in person about this, because I know in person we can talk a lot better about things that we have different opinions on versus in email. So I've just learned to understand him and deal with him on his own terms versus trying to force him into mine. And with my friend, my impression is that if those two guys learned to accept each other's quirks and the way that they are different and difficult in some ways, they could work really, really well together, but they aren't. So they still try to work with each other in their own paradigms, and that creates a lot of conflict because both of them secretly think that the other person is just wrong in the way they handle certain things. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it kind of goes back to like trust, responsibility, some of the Batman Robin stuff we talked about. And the way I think about it is that a lot of those tactics that we would like suggest or tell people to do are really to solve a problem of relationships. And I think about relationships a lot. I think it has something to do with my personality and upbringing. But for me, when you say what you're saying, I think it's a fundamental problem we have as humans of wanting to believe something we believe about somebody else so strongly that we'll go ignore what the truth is and what they're really like. And I've done this mistake. I don't usually do it on the co-founder side because I have a pretty stable co-founder relationship. But we also always have a partner who's either a founding team member or co-founder, depending on how you look at it, that has significant stake in the company, that's an engineer. And you know, one of the things you want to appreciate when you have relationships like that, or even when you're like trying to, you know, work with a team member or bring them on really quickly, is you're trying to determine what they're capable of, really, and how they're going to contribute to the organization. And a lot of that has to do with their outlook on the world, their experience, and being able to respect who they are. So I'll probably save my tip on this till the end for like how I like to bring people on a team. But it's very related to this thing that you're talking about, which is like, it's almost like on paper, it looks like, oh, you guys should work well together. But then in practice, there's all these conflicts or all these issues. And some people, one of the tactics they use to solve that is they'll align on values early on in the company, and they'll make sure that those are always fundamental. But then the opinions, the tactics, and all that stuff, those can all change as long as they're aligned with the common value of all the people in the company at the time. So I would say that like most of the things we do in startups are all hacks to fix this problem that you are talking about.
Yeah, I'm wondering if, you know, I also think that part of what I'm observing people do is that in the early stages of a relationship, I think there's an emphasis on the strengths, so an emphasis on what the other person brings to the table that's desirable or that's currently lacking. And people evaluate each other and go, wow, this person's really amazing at X. And I really want that, or I think I really need this to be successful in my company. And once that, it's kind of like the flirting phase where you see everything that's attractive about the other person. But then, well, you know, you get into the we move in together phase, and then into the we have children and we get married and we're like 5 to 10 years into the relationship, where you don't see the beautiful, attractive, shiny new things. You've seen everything, and you probably now have a stronger emphasis on everything you don't like, all the weaknesses, all the quirks, all the things that are annoying, all the things that are inconvenient to you, and you start to ignore the good things and take them for granted. And I think that's just an obvious, unfortunate, and unhealthy way of building, creating and building and maintaining relationships, because you find that co-founder, you find that team, the early hire that you want to make because they're so attractive in their strengths and what they bring to the table. But then after you work with them day in and day out and you work with them through some highs and lows, they have maybe just some small, in many cases, it's small things. It's like quirks, it's personality traits, it's little things.
But human beings are flawed.
Yeah, they are. All of them.
Like, you essentially get this. This is why I was saying you get this idea of someone in your head,
yeah,
and then you want to believe it, yeah. And then when they make you disbelieve it somehow, just some action or some little thing, you like freak out, right? And I think a lot of it has to do with just controlling yourself and realizing that we're all human, we're all going to make mistakes, and we can't get that excited about any one person. And I know that sounds really messed up because that excitement is what makes you excited about them joining the team or founding a company with them or working with them. But at the end of the day, there's a very objective way to look at the situation of having this kind of relationship. And the objective way is like, look, you're good at some stuff. I'm good at some stuff. Some of it is complementary, but let's figure out how we're going to align on sort of what this business needs and how we both can help it. Right. And I think that what I find funny is that that's what I call going back to basics. Right? Basics are we're trying to build a business, right? And being able to focus and realign on those things is kind of some of the strategies that I've used, because it's very easy to forget that, like, we're all human, we make mistakes, and nobody's perfect, right? But the funny thing is, when you partner with someone or bring someone on your team, you almost need to believe the exact opposite in order to have conviction that they're a great person to work with.
It's so funny because, you know, when you think about it very rationally, I think it's easy to see, hey, this, what does this person bring to the table? What are the pros and cons? Do these negatives really outweigh the positives? And people could make, you know, some very basic math and come up with a rational decision on, does it make sense to work with this person or not, without wanting to change them or.
So my concern with that, just high level, is we have to make sure we're doing that with the other person there.
Yeah, well,
when you don't do that, when you don't do that with the other person, you screw it all up, because you're making shit up on their behalf, and then you're making decisions on their behalf on how you're going to treat them in a business context on top of all that.
Yeah.
Right. And in a business context, we all have a common goal, which is grow the damn business.
Yeah.
Right. Like, if you don't have that common goal in a business, don't be in the business. Right. So it's basically like, we have to remember that these people are also human, and everything we believe about them might not be true. And the only way to verify some of those things is talk it out with them and align. Right. So, you know, I was going to give this tip later, but it's essentially something I've started doing and it's been working, which is what I call throw people in the deep end. And if I had to find a new co-founder, I would do the same thing. And what that means is, there's a deep end of the pool. The person standing on the edge of it, you've hired them, and you're trying to figure out where they break or whether they can swim or what their swimming style is. So you just throw them in the pool. And you say, here's the pool. Here's my company. Here's all the things that are possible. Here's where I think you can be helpful. You're in the deep end. Let's go. Right? And then your job is to figure out, do they stay in the deep end? Do they even need to go more shallow? Do they need these floaties to help them? What do they need? Right? And if you're figuring that out together, that's much more impactful. For example, today, I brought on someone new on one of our teams, and it was my job, because I'm directly responsible for that individual. And literally, I told him it's the deep end, and I gave him all the context, gave him all the things around the options of how he can be successful in the organization. And honestly, I didn't know what he would pick. I gave him two, and he felt more comfortable with one of them. And now we're aligned on that's what he's going to do for us. But this is a very classic example of what you're saying. We, as an organization, made a commitment to bring someone like him on because we had a very specific idea of what he was going to do, right? We aligned with that on him earlier in the hiring process. And now, as he's on board, we're just doubling down on that same thing and being very clear with him. I am damn sure in the next 3 months, it's going to take us 3 months to figure out exactly what he wants to do. But I'm also damn sure that if there's a way he can contribute in his capacity in the company that he feels comfortable with, we will figure that out in that amount of time. But previously, it would be more like, oh, here's what you're doing. Here's the role. We need you to do these five things right now. Right. And what I learned about that approach is that made a lot of assumptions about the human being and what they want to do, what they feel comfortable doing, and how they can be supported. And that doesn't work. Like, it has to be done with them. So that's my sort of tip and advice. But like, I don't know any other way except throw people in and support them, but don't have so many opinions about how they're going to be awesome in your company.
So I love that. I also think that it's super crucial what you said earlier with the don't come up with a way of dealing with another human being on your own. Have them at the table. It's the only fair and right thing to do is talk it out with them and allow them to respond and make this a process that involves both parties, not just yourself. So I love that. I want to bring it back to the one part, which to me seems to be the concept of like accepting others the way they
are. For who they are. Accept others for who they are. Yeah, I love that. I think that's something you and I have both learned the hard way in different ways. So that's a good segue on this one.
Because in this particular case, because I know both founders fairly well, I know that in the early days when they start, so they knew each other for a while. And when they started working together, they knew each other's quirks. So same thing with me and Anthony and Thomas. We knew each other. We knew each other's strengths. We had worked on a few things before. With Anthony, I was friends for 5 years. So there was some knowledge in who the other person is, but that didn't prevent me from, you know, after the honeymoon phase was over of starting the company, being irritated by who these people really were and trying to secretly want them to change to potentially that could have derailed us until I realized, hey, they seem to be accepting me for who I am without the need to change me. Am I willing and ready to do the same thing back to them? Because if not, then I need to find somebody else. But then who will ever be exactly how I want them to be? Nobody.
So I love that. And I've dealt with that. And I deal with it all the time because I'm judgmental. If anyone hasn't noticed. I'm definitely not. I don't hold my judgments as tight as I might sound like I hold them. But I'm very judgmental. And so the one thing I did was I realized and I thought about it, the same thing you're talking about. And one thing I realized is you can't accept somebody until you understand them. And so in your and this directly relates to your scenario, your co-founder leaving the room. If it were me today in my somewhat mature state about this stuff, I would observe that and then pull him aside the first two or three times I saw it after I saw it and be like, yo, you're doing this. I don't do this. And here's the reason I don't do this. But I want to know why you're doing it because there's something I don't understand about what's going through your head. And I want to be able to just understand. I'm not trying to change you, but I want to understand what you're doing because that'll help me just not feel so weird about it because it's not what I would do. Right. And I think that open dialogue, and there's a different way to say that if you're not willing to reveal how you do it, where it's just like, hey, can you explain like you did this a few times and I noticed it. I just love to understand like, you know, what's going through your head.
Yeah, I love that. This is the, you know, and also, so there's a lot in there. Number one is open communication. Number two is early communication, which I think is crucial. People really underestimate the power of bringing something up immediately versus letting it grow and linger for a long time.
Be a tattletale. I hate it because it's the wrong, like, I hate the negative of tattletaling, but be a tattletale to the person about their own behavior in order for you to understand it, right? It's kind of like you're basically telling them about some behavior that's odd or weird or, you know, that you don't understand. That's like you probably felt, I would assume that you felt at that time that the values you have are different than his, right? But that was not true at all. It was more of the things you were assuming, like nervousness and all that. But if you don't ask him, then you don't get definitive sort of idea from that person on how they feel about what they're doing.
Because that's unfair. Yeah, that exact example relates to just different learned behavior and different interpretations on behavior. For me, walking in a room without saying hello means I'm angry, I'm pissed, or I don't like you. For him, walking into a room without saying hello was just, that's the way I walk into a room.
He might be quiet. He might be introverted. He might not think of it.
Yeah. And for him, in his specific example, it was when I know the people in the room with a level of intimacy that doesn't require me to formally introduce myself.
I'm not going
to
waste my time.
I'm not going to waste any time saying hello when I know everybody here.
And so my suggestion to him, just if he was open to the feedback, would have been like, can you just smile when you walk in next time and I'll be fine. Or just look at me and smile and I'll leave you alone.
Well, whatever,
because
right?
But some of those things, yeah, but there's also like, usually people are open to that kind of stuff too. If I don't mean that you want to change his behavior, but you want to feel comfortable that he acknowledges, you know, being in the room and makes you feel good about it too. But like at the same time, like there's just these things you can do. And that might not be the best example of it, but I've been able to essentially help people change their behaviors for the better by suggesting just little tweaks. And as they do them, they start understanding the difference between how I think about it and how they do. So I know we talked about how, like, you know, you don't want to change somebody. I totally agree. But if there's room for helping someone improve themselves and you can align on that, this is the best way to do it, which is you start talking to them about it and you figure out whether it's something you think that you can commonly agree upon changing, improving, whatever, or it's something where now you understand why the person does it and then you're over it.
Sometimes it's improving, but what happens to me, it seems, is you learn to translate each other's behavior into a common language. And then based on that, I can either figure out and say, oh, wow, everybody translates me not saying hello as I'm hating them. That's not really what's going on. So let me start speaking a different language. Or when that person is quiet, I'm not translating that anymore into this person's pissed at me, but I learned to speak that person's language better and understand how to interpret their behavior better and go, oh, when this person is silent, they're just focused or they feel comfortable. So I think a lot of this is like about learning to translate each other's behavior and actions into common language, because it's not. The one person is really saying one thing through their behavior and I really hear or interpret a different thing. And that's really a lot of times a reason why we're having conflict or we're pissed at each other. But coming back to the point of acceptance, the more I mature and the more I see in life, the more I find that people not having learned to accept others for who they truly are is a major source for just destruction of value and conflict and the end of many, many relationships where it didn't require an ending to happen, like where it was not the right thing and where the two parties would have had a very productive and happy relationship, but they just didn't have it because one side or the other, both could not and would not just accept the other for who they were. And it was these little tiny things that were irritating, but not significant, that ended all the good things that were truly significant. And I'm speaking now, you know, I'm speaking from own experience, you know, and the way that I treated people and how judgmental I used to be and still am, and something I'm trying to work at. But also to just throw out another personal weird example, but it's just kept coming up in my head as we were having this discussion, is my own mother. So my mom is awesome, and we might do an episode about parents. We should do an episode about parents and what we learned from them.
We have to do an episode about parents.
We have to do an episode on that.
Yeah.
But my mom, so my father died many years ago when I was just 6. My mom was not in a relationship for the majority of her life afterwards. And just a few years ago, she found somebody and she, you know, went into a relationship late in her life. She was already 56.
How old?
My mom is 63 now. She was
that's awesome.
58, 59, right?
My dad got married at 60.
There you go.
Remarried. At 60.
There you go. My mother was like single after my dad died for what, 20 years, right? So she gets into a relationship with somebody that's great for her. This was an interesting test in acceptance as well, because the person was not somebody that was like, it was not somebody that I would have chosen, right? So it was not my pick, but it was, he was good to her and she was happy with him. So I was happy for them, right? So there was an interesting test in acceptance for myself. But unfortunately, you take somebody, so that relationship lasted for, you know, I don't know, 3-4 years. It ended. And the reason why it ended had nothing to do with the really important things. It had all to do with small things that to me seem insignificant, but that the two of them could not accept each other fully and go, you know what? These little things are not as important as these really big, important things.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, of course, it's also like late age that these people were like,